and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are about to experience trash cinema.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Trash Tapes. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I am your host, Johan Chapul, and the inflictor of pain. And as per usual, I'm here with my victim and DJ, Edward Harvey. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing all right. I'm doing all right at the minute, actually. It's a new year. It's 2022. I thought yeah. I'd be dead by now, but we're here now.
Wow. Kicking off the podcast in style.
I know, right? We're kicking it off.
Another year, guys.
Another year. We have survived it through. But honestly, I thought we start the new year with something very, very different. But also, we've got a guest. So he's already been on the podcast before. And last time I did put him something which was completely uncomfortable. This one I think might be a little bit more in his ballpark, but we'll see how that turns out. So... yeah. Liam Banks, hello. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. A new year. Still happy to be alive. Happy to have seen this film. And happy to discuss what the hell we've just witnessed as we're watching it. So, yeah, it should be fun.
I feel like this episode is going to be more like a bizarre film studies analysis of what the hell this was, more than anything else.
I feel like as well, when you message me and you ask if I want to come on the podcast, there is like a theme. You never like give me anything just like that, I don't know, everyone would universally agree is a good film.
Wait, you guys had teeth last time, didn't you?
Yes.
I feel like there is a running theme of, I don't know, bodily things going on. I don't know. You get me on every episode just to talk about weird people's shit, so...
I'm not going to lie. Yeah, but then again, why? I mean, this is the thing. I'm actually hoping this is the case. When people hear a message from me going, "Hi there, would you like to watch a movie with me?" I want them to feel like, oh no, what's he going to give me?
I met Liam the other night, who I do their queer podcast with. Yes. And he told me that he's coming on an episode, and he told me what you guys are talking about there. And I'm like, yeah, I don't get anything like that. I get... like vaginas with teeth and tumor beasts. So
partly because you are to me and most of the you are the horror guy, so I would have to throw your weird horror shit at you. That is true. And
I take that.
But and then again, he did suggest. Well, other Liam did suggest and say like, right, I want to do this one, which I won't tease. But obviously, it's a musical.
He didn't tell me that information. I'm gonna.
I kind of want to. He actually going to say this is my. I really like this piece of trash, and it's like, well, if you really do, come and defend it. So he now needs to prove that he really likes,
I'm looking forward to that episode,
Olivia Newton-John singing in space. But anyway, let's get back to the point, which is I got you on, and honestly, we picked this movie because, oddly enough, first of all, this is the most recent movie we've ever done on the podcast. Like, literally, this came out last year. So
most movies we do are kind of old or a bit more obscure, like they're late, like they're like early 2000s, the 90s, the 80s, you know, we're yep. there. Never something that literally came out in the cinemas about 6 or 7 months ago.
Yeah, well, I suppose, yes. It usually comes with age, doesn't it? The trashiness of it all.
But this one came in a pile of stinking freshness.
Well, I think that's because a lot of modern movies tend to be like parodies and stuff, don't they? They're not like sincere with their trashiness. So, like, you don't get a lot of that now. This is why this is quite a fresh movie. It's at least playing like it's playing it straight, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for all those in the who figure out, what the hell's that movie? Well, that would be James Wan's Malignant.
When I was young, something happened to me.
Stop saying that.
Maddie, who are you talking to?
Gabriel.
Is he your imaginary friend?
Whatever you went through before you joined our family, it hurt you in a way that I can't even imagine. You created him.
Maddie, what's going on?
So that you could survive.
I wanted to do something that was a bit different, but yet hark back to my roots. You gotta take chances. If you don't, you end up making the same old thing again and again and again. I think audiences are starved for something that's new and different.
We are going to turn back the hands of time. Close your eyes.
He's here too.
Who is he?
Who is Gabriel?
I'm the only one that can see him.
That's him. He wants to talk to you.
Right. That's all the noises I can come up with when someone tries to scare me. Describe me what Malignant is.
Malignant in one noise, just
slightly high-pitched.
A high-pitched, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I say about Malignant.
What?
Nicely done.
This is the thing I will say, though, is the reason why we're partly doing it, and this is something showing how much trust I have in Ed, okay? Because he sent me a message literally like right out of the cinema. Cause you went with our buddy Tommy, didn't we? So you went to cinema and you sent me a message right afterwards. So like, I don't know what this is, but this is one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Yeah. It's interesting because I didn't know, I went into it completely blind. So I didn't know anything about what James Wan had said about it. I just saw the trailer, which is a very generic James Wan trailer. You're expecting like The Conjuring or something like that. Mm. I didn't know that he'd done tweets saying like, don't expect The Conjuring, but I didn't see any of that. I just saw what was in front of me. And then I didn't understand the tone at first. I thought it was like, he was just sort of off his game. Mm. And it was just like a paycheck movie at first, and it was accidentally bad. But then I looked into it more, and I watched it again after on DVD and stuff like that, and it suddenly started to click, and it suddenly became amazing to me. But on the first viewing in the cinema, I didn't get it at all. It had to, but I found it absolutely hilarious. But I thought I was laughing at it. I wasn't laughing with it at the time.
Mm. I'd still argue, though, that there are some things I'm laughing at it. There's a few. I'm sitting there going, this can't be it. But I will say, when you send me that message and you're saying, like, I think this is kind of amazing. Yeah. I haven't been to cinema. I trusted you off the bat to the point that I pre-ordered the DVD, assuming That what you said was genius. Like, saying, right, this movie's that good. I'm going to pre-order on DVD and wait it till it arrives on DVD to watch it. And then, yeah, I sat down, watched it on my own, which I think is the best thing, because when you said, well, let's try and watch it in the cinema, I sat there going, if this is what I think it is, there's no way I'm going to convince people to join me to go to the movies to watch this.
I mean, I disagree. I think it's a movie that you have to watch with people who get it. Like, yeah. After, because, like, me and Tommy were bursting out laughing throughout the entire movie, like, really enjoying it. A lot of the other people were just generic audience who weren't, like, sort of into horror. And they were completely straight-faced thinking, well, this is shit, isn't it? Like, that, they kind of had that attitude. Whereas we didn't know why we were enjoying it, me and Tommy, but we really loved it. So
I think, but this is the thing, though. Even when I had it on DVD, I can't just go around. It's very difficult. I need to find, like, the right person or friend going, hey, buddy, do you want to come around and see this weird-ass movie?
It's a select group of people, that you get on board.
It's surprisingly, this is partly the reason why I wanted to do the Trash Tapes in the first place. It's finding that weird niche movie where you can show with people going, do you want to laugh? Do you want to laugh at something really weird? Join in, please.
Absolutely.
And then, so I watched it on my own because I have no friends who would be willing to join me on this. And I had a great time. But it's also something we want to discuss. Now, the reason why I got you on, Liam, is one of the first things, I think you do not shy on the fact that you're a huge James Wan fan.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, he's definitely up there. And I don't know, I find it hard to think of many directors these days that I think are that prolific, particularly genre directors. I mean, Ed, you mentioned the marketing of the film. I kind of spoil things for myself sometimes because I get so heavily involved in, like, the trailers and the Twitter conversations. But he was, like, literally involved in the marketing. Like, the trailer started with a special message from James Wan. It all felt like very Hitchcock. And I mean, I think that kind of maybe fits in with some of the tone, you know, like when you think about the old directors who would be kind of like as much of a character of the movie as the stories they were telling. And I think that's what he was trying to kind of inhabit, that space. But yeah, I think this was definitely a different side of James Wan than anything I'd ever seen before. I know he can scare, and I know that he can do big action pieces as well, from like Aquaman, Fast and Furious, was it 6, 7?
Yeah, I think.
I still think... I still think, obviously, horror, it obviously holds a special place in his heart because he keeps coming back to it, which I am always going to be a fan of as well. So, I was definitely hyped for this when it was announced.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I saw the trailer. The thing is, a little bit differently like you, I saw the trailer and weirdly, I kind of thought nothing of it. In fact, I really, just like probably what you did, I started going like, this doesn't. It feels like it's missing something, and I think maybe if he is right on the idea that he was kind of, it was two things. This is what we want to discuss. It's either James Wan purposely said, "I'm not going to tell them what this movie's about," or it's the production company saying, "We can't sell it like this. How do we sell it? Let's make it look like every generic James Wan movie, and do that instead."
It definitely looks like that. Like, I think it's in order to get bums on seats, just look, sell it like a James Wan sort of regular movie. People go, oh yeah, it's another, it's going to be like The Conjuring, I'll go and watch it. And then they might be betrayed if they're expecting that, but like at least they will be there and, you know, spend the money.
I think I did find it really confusing because you literally had James Wan sat down saying, this isn't like any other movie I've ever made. This isn't like The Conjuring. This isn't like whatever. But then it cut to like clips of almost like a checklist of stuff that we've seen him do before. And I think that's what worried me. And if I'm being honest, my expectations were kind of low going into it because I saw like the cheesy VHS, like where someone's talking to someone who's not there and the hypnosis scene with the metronome ticking and all of that. And I'm like, we've seen this from James Wan himself a lot in the last decade. So what is it that's going to be so different in this film? And I suppose that's where the intrigue was for me that still made me go and watch it.
Obviously, this came out literally just, what, about 7, 8 months ago in the cinema or something like that? It came around that time. And the best way I can describe it is, in terms of genre, it is a horror movie, but one of the things that James Wan actually said in an interview, and I kind of love this quote, if I can find it. I think he basically said that this movie is because some people say this movie is a genre bender. It's not just horror. It's like, no, it's not a genre bender. It's a genre blender. He literally has seemed to he basically has said that this movie is not just this. It is this is also this. It's also that. It's also this. And I can see that when you go through it because it's
ooh. Didn't he actually say in a as a quote him saying like, this is a movie that you'd find on the back of a VHS shelf. I'm sure he's actually said that. And that's a big giveaway. If he's actually saying that, then he's admitting that he's doing it intentionally to look like one of those old movies he loved from the 80s or whatever.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even again, with like the poster, the artwork, everything that we kind of saw visually, aside from the trailers, it was given as that old school horror vibe, wasn't it? Very much so. So I don't know. I know it's something we're probably going to argue about or talk about more further on, but I definitely think it was the intention from the outset. But I think upon first viewing, you're maybe not aware of that. And I think that's where repeat viewings kind of build on the experience of it.
Mm. It definitely feels like that. So I feel like maybe that is the case. It needs to be repeated viewings because watching it first time blank, I'm sitting there going, I'm not entirely on board, and it's something we'll talk about in a second, really, where the first half of the movie I sat there going, this is a bit hokey, it's a bit off. I'm a little off the game here. It doesn't feel like the other stuff that I've seen him of in. And then not even halfway through, beyond that a little bit, suddenly one thing happens and then it's like, all right, we're at hour 11 now. I've never seen any movie go that bonkers so in the last 20 minutes, I think, in any movie I've ever seen in recent memory. It's so... because even in those kind of movies where it goes bonkers the last 20 minutes, there's at least a little bit throughout. This is a hard turn. A hard U-turn.
It's like if you were turning a dial and the dial goes up to 10, but it's also got holy shit at the end of 10. It's like it's definitely onto holy shit.
Absolutely.
What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly.
The thing is, though, is it was trying, I think even the film itself, it's trying to trick the viewer to say it's one thing, isn't it? Because, I mean, it's very ambiguous as to whether or not it's supernatural. Is it a slasher? And then it becomes this whole other beast, kind of literally. And I don't know. I think the whole thing's about deception, isn't it?
Yeah, because I mean, if it was shot like a Grindhouse movie, you'd know immediately it was supposed to be a bad movie intentionally. But it's shot, like, it's beautiful the way it's shot. Yeah. And it's got some like, that overhead camera thing, like a spider cam that follows Madison around the house in one shot. That is amazing.
The cinematography is gorgeous. It's really nice.
And that's the thing, is like, again, going back to this, and this is where we're going to start dissecting. We're going to go right into the movie at this point, realistically, but we're going to start dissecting it because are there some bits which are a happy accident? Is all this really well planned, or is there just something they stumbled across doing something, going, you know what, we can push this into it? Because there's some interesting moments in the production, in terms of its look, in terms of its what's referencing. Who actually wrote it, which is something else we're going to throw in there. Seeing what is this, basically? Is it just a fun little quirky thing that James Wan decided to do, or something that is genuinely like, we want to make this a serious movie because of what's happening in here? Your spider cam thing, for example, that's owed to Brian De Palma in the early, in the 80s stuff. He used to do a lot of those really fluid, slick, like, camera movements. And there's a lot of very, very well-shot, well-planned shots.
I mean, it shows off the production design, doesn't it? Those sorts of things. And I think in some ways, I know you've obviously spoken about it being a De Palma trademark. I think over the years, it's become a James Wan trademark as well. Like, it is one of those things. And I think in an interview somewhere, I've heard him kind of say, you know, when he's trying to introduce a space, particularly what comes to mind is the first Conjuring film, when you have that moving in scene, you have that Steadicam shot that basically introduces you to the whole family, the whole, like, downstairs level of the house. It's floating around. And I mean, you get to see everything, but it still feels kind of grounded in the story. Yeah. And I mean, with this, I can remember just marveling at it when I first saw it, just thinking, Jesus, they must have literally designed like a two-story set with this one camera shot in mind, because they had to know where this camera was going to go, how to follow like Madison and all of this. And it was, I don't know, when you've got that level of, I don't know, direction and that level of kind of control over things, I think that's what maybe sets this film aside from other kind of trashier films, is that they're trashy maybe because they don't have those kind of grand elements to them. But what made this weird, and I will say, I think weird is probably how I would describe it, is the fact it was so grand, but it was trash. It looked magnificent, but it was just weird. It was bizarre.
And this is the thing I feel partly, to me, it makes me feel more confused and not sure whether or not James Wan was really trying to aim for the trash aesthetic or not, or just happened to stumble into it. Because it's, James Wan is one of the directors I feel that has got, he's so slick in terms of how he pulls off his shots. Camera work, he's one of those directors that, you know, like, you know, it's all really well structured and planned out.
Yeah.
But then when you go to the plot of it, you're thinking, this should be something shot on the crappiest tape recorder. And it should be something done with really schlocky nonsense.
Yeah.
But because it's got that James Wan shine on it. I can't tell. Odd. I was conflicted going through. This looks really nice.
I mean, there's no reason why that whole sequence couldn't have been done like Sam Raimi on a plank of wood, Evil Dead style, and followed her up the stairs. And I think it would have still equally as been as entertaining. But yeah, I mean, what stood out to me as well was the opening. You know, when you have like this establishing shot of this asylum.
Yes.
You're like, that is money right there. That visual effects shot is so much money, you can tell it is. And then it cuts inside, and then the nurse is like, it's time to cut out the cancer. And you're like, what? What is going on? Yes. It's just such a contradiction.
I've got a clip. Let's listen to her lines in that. I've just cut it up so you just hear her lines, basically, all the best bits.
Yeah, go for it.
So, it's becoming more apparent that not only is Gabriel getting stronger, he's becoming more malicious. If his strength and ability continue to grow at this rate, we will no longer be able to contain him. However, I am still determined.
Dr. Weaver, he got out again.
No.
He made it all the way to the records room before we got to him. He found his information.
He wants to go home. Dr. Fields, what the hell is happening?
I tried to subdue him with ECT, but the electroshock had no effect on him. Then all the machines started going crazy. It was like he was drinking the electricity and controlling our machines.
Oh, no.
Strap him into the chair.
Oh, God.
You've been a bad, bad boy, Gabriel.
He's always been a bad boy. Oh, no.
Oh, my God. He speaks.
He's brought
it to speaks!
I thought we could help him. But I was wrong. It's time we cut out the cancer.
Yes!
Yes! Honestly, that's the next drinking game. Do a shot every time someone says it's time to cut out the cancer.
Do you know what that opening reminds me of? Well, actually, the whole sort of like movie reminds me of this. It's like a rock out, like a metal album from the early 2000s. You know how like a Rob Zombie like album has like this build up intro and then it kicks in, like it's just got this spooky intro and then it kicks in with like.
So you're basically, so basically you're saying Rob Zombie's next album should have, it's time to cut out the cancer.
because after that moment, you get a title sequence with music like this.
It was surprisingly grandiose.
It was just such a juxtaposition. I mean, the fact that, I think what got me as well was the tranquilizer gun that they just had on hand. I was like, what is this, Jurassic Park? Like, what are we doing? They're just shooting what we then find out is a child with a tranquil gun.
But just going back to the song quickly, Ed, I'm just saying that quickly. It's like, the score here is honestly too good for this movie. Does that make sense? Like, from what are you expecting? It's like it's grandiose, but it's got like synth and it's got strings and everything's big and grand.
Well, I mean, yeah, that title's music sounds like Nine Inch Nails. And in the cinema, it is the loudest thing. It is so loud. It reminded me of like early 2000s title sequences, though, because they're like heavy on like industrial like metal and stuff like that. And it's very like in your face immediately, but it felt dated. There's lots of references to, you know, lots of eras that James Wan loves. Like, I mean, he started becoming big in the early 2000s, and so he loves obviously that era.
Yeah.
But obviously when he was younger, he loved like the 80s and stuff. So you got the 80s and the 90s in there as well. But it's this. But it all looks like a modern movie. That's the confusing aspect. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of. I don't know, again, it kind of added into the weirdness of it. Obviously, it's set during present times because we've got, obviously, the technology, iPhones, all that sort of thing in it. But obviously, this is kind of, like, jumping ahead. But that opening felt very like it was a period piece. I felt like it was older than the 90s initially. But then, obviously, then when we get to, like, the ending in the cell, all the women look like they're out of a 70s grindhouse prison film.
100%.
And you're like... I don't know. So, I guess it is literally just have some fun. And I think with the music, Bashara was having some fun again because it was just throw everything at it sort of thing.
100%. It feels, again, opening that little sequence, and this is the thing, you're right about it. It's weird how you've got... I mean, listening to that on its own just made me laugh again because, number one, what's her accent again? Is it supposed to be a British accent? Because I don't know where she's from.
She's a very posh American.
I am a very posh, slightly British American lady who acts wooden as balls, right?
Yeah.
But then you've got the male nurse walking in, running like, oh no! And it basically is all an exposition dump within that. And it's really kind of it is B-movie, even C-level acting schlock, but it looks so good. And you'd say, what? Why does everything look this good?
It's funny though, because on second viewing, I'm like, why didn't I know this was intentional and it's a joke? It's like on the first viewing, I just took that bit was like off tonally, and then the rest of the movie was kind of like, Oh, this is how it's supposed to be, this bit. And I'll just ignore that. Like,
they've
for the
used
moment.
The budget on another piece of the film. So they've just got the people they could afford in. I think the thing, though, is, you know, knowing, though, obviously how that opening is, because I personally think the opening is magnificent. I will say the first time I saw it, I was a bit like, what? But I think part of me then kind of wishes the rest of the film lent into that a little bit more, because I do think... there are certainly some characters and actors involved who maybe did think they were in a different film, but...
I mean, obviously the acting is really bad throughout, but I'm wondering... I'd like to see these actors in another role and acting their socks off, because then they'll know that James Wan was directing them to act bad deliberately. Yeah,
absolutely.
You've got Annabelle Wallace, who has done some good stuff. Like, she's done good stuff in it, but she feels like I've seen her face before. It's like I've seen her before. She's doing. I know you can do better than this, which again makes me. The whole idea is, if this is fully all intentional. Everything, including the bad acting, can I just say James Wan must be some kind of directorial genius to make someone purposely act bad in a way that doesn't look like it was directed that it was acted bad. It's mind loops, if it was. James Wan was obviously directing this, and he did this sort of in between, because he was currently, at the time, he was still working on trying to do Aquaman 2, I think he was.
I think just literally wrapped, like, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
He wrapped, and it looked insane, like, how many days they were filming for, so I love how he just does these films in between films. It's just like, for goodness sake, dude.
I think what's happened here is he sat there going, like, I need something in between as a palate cleanser before I get into this big, like, I need something for me before I do this big Warner Brothers DC huge budget movie. So he's sitting there going, right, I need to do something. And this is the thing. This movie was co-written by James Wan's wife.
Yeah.
Right? I found that interesting.
And it's also the first time she's ever written anything. So, so this is, again, it feels a little bit like, okay, is this, it, again, maybe the, I wish I could be a fly on the wall, like in his house when the idea of this came to be. Because I would love if basically his wife comes over and says, I've got an idea for a film. Just, you know, and but I imagine he's going through the script. It's terrible because it's like it doesn't want to disappoint his wife. It's like this is genius.
It's Malignant or a divorce. That's how this film happened.
I reckon he does love like those movies that are bad movies from like with a story with a script like that. They obviously. Yeah. So it's a weird thing. Like even if she wrote it and it was bad, but he could have just thought, well, this is bad, but it's brilliant. It's brilliantly bad.
Yeah.
Or maybe the idea that again, trying to break this down, maybe all this was done on purpose. Maybe the idea is like, you know, maybe Ingrid, who basically is his wife, sit there and goes like, yeah, actually, maybe she generally loves all these like, these late 90s, early noughties, really bad, schlocky horror movies that are like nothing, right? She loves that. And says, I just want to make one of those. And maybe because he knows, obviously they know each other very well, they say like, well, we could workshop something. And they did that. And this is now a joint effort, which means there's a lot of things here. I mean, Ingrid also, she does play a character in this. She plays I believe it's sort of like, you know, it's basically sexy nerd, glasses, very awkward, all the funny lines are
she's just a general forensic assistant. She's like forensics but assistants, but then she does like other little bits as well. She hasn't really got a
she's
proper
there
job
all the time. I mean, you know, if this was a different film, she would be the killer because she is just there all of the time.
I have been here all the time. But she's also, again, and this is kind of showing whether or not this was done on purpose or just falling into it, she hasn't really acted a lot. And she hasn't really, I mean, her first, her first movie role is Blood Rain. So, although she was a young girl at that point, but, you know, she was in Blood Rain, for God's sake. and all these other movies are basically movies from Romania. Once she get married, obviously, with James Wan, got into The Nun and The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Yeah, I noticed that then she suddenly started appearing in all of his films. It reminded me of David F. Sandberg and obviously his wife Lotta in a lot of his stuff,
Very sexy wife.
It's Hollywood. Is it still nepotism? Is it counted as nepotism?
No, that's purely nepotism. But then this is the thing. Like maybe this is something like, you know, we're workshopping this together and they come up with something. But again, the levels of this is she's purposely really bad at this, right? Or is she just a bad actress? You see where I'm coming from with this? This is why I'm having constant mind gymnastics here.
I wonder if the whole film was supposed to be really serious and really good, and then he came on set and then directed her and was like, oh God, this is bad. We're going to have to change the whole film now to match your performance. I don't know whether he just did a full like 180 on stuff.
I would love if this was written seriously and then somehow it's like, okay, fuck it, we're going to have to make this goofier, because first day on set, it's like he's realizing, God, this is technically kind of crap.
This is
just realised it all clicked in.
I think it was definitely intentional. It's got, I hope so.
In terms of the actors, for me, I thought the worst one was the sister.
I thought she was great.
Yeah, but you know, like, I'll play this clip. It's more of a visual thing, but this clip.
Mom and Dad took me in when I was 8. I don't remember anything before that. Mom told me that my biological mother died during my birth. Sydney, I'm adopted.
I love that bit. And at this point, she's like so shocked. She's like, oh no!
I mean, when I saw that in the cinema, that's the moment where Tommy and I first burst out laughing, because it's mainly the fact that the music is funny.
So intense.
The music It like, and she's like doing this puzzled face, like, what? What?
Why have I not like that?
And
it
gets
this?
More puzzled as the music gets more intense. Yeah. And yeah, that because that music, it's a cover of Where Is My Mind, isn't it? And it's like a music, it plays all the way through, like in little sort of.
Which again, if that is, again, if it's a cover of Where Is My Mind, it's such huge fucking foreshadowing when you think about it.
Johan, the title is Malignant. So straight away I was like, tumor.
I know, but point being, you know, I know it's not subtle. This movie isn't subtle.
No, it really isn't.
But for fuck's sake, like, how much more of the nail do you need to hammer into this coffin just to prove the point? It's great stuff, though. Although with the sister, though, I mean, honestly, one of my favorite scenes of the sister is when we're first introduced to her, where she's dressed in a goddamn fairy princess outfit.
Why not? Why not? She's just an everyday girl, just doing everyday things.
Yeah,
I mean, that's never mentioned again.
it's like, oh, by the way, I do a thing, and then that's it. It's like, oh,
I love the fact that she's probably fired now because she's just not turned up for any shifts since that scene.
Because ever since then, she's got into this bizarre, weird. Ass murder mystery nonsense that has absolutely nothing to do with her. Yep. You really think about it. Another one is the boyfriend, the first boyfriend, where one of my favorite lines in the movie is basically when we're first introduced to him, and then she goes like, oh yeah, I thought you were supposed to be at work. Yeah, but you know, new babies being a bit awkward. And then literally just goes and physically assaults her, but in a way that I know it's awful, but I laughed. And I don't know why. Whether it's because of his acting or some of the lines he says or just how fucking just blasé it felt.
I just think it escalated way too quickly. Like, he's literally watching a sports show, everything's fine. And you literally cut like a minute later, he slammed her head against the wall and said, don't let another of my babies die in you. And you're like, okay, well, this guy's going to die then because we're all supposed to hate him now.
Yeah.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
I have got a clip of the shitty husband. Let's hear it.
Please.
Shitty husband.
I was watching that.
Please, Derek, I really need to get some rest.
No. Maybe you need to stop getting pregnant.
Horrendous line!
You know, the doctor said this could happen again, right? You know that. How many times do I have to watch my children die inside of you?
Bloody hell.
Hell.
Savage.
Stop.
You're breaking my heart, Maddie, I swear to God.
And I'm breaking your head.
Kapow!
You can't keep doing this.
Doing what? Doing what? Madison, tell me what I'm doing, huh? Tell me what I'm doing. Are you saying this is my fault? Are you saying this keeps happening because...
Don't touch her!
Bitch!
Oh.
Shit. Oh, baby. I'm so sorry.
You did that, you asshole!
Get you some ice, okay? Okay, I'm gonna get you some ice. Hold on.
The immediate apology.
Yeah.
Oh, no, my actions have consequences.
It's so funny because it's like on another review I've heard of this film, they were saying if it's meant to be like not serious movie and like a camp movie, then why have you got like really serious subject matter, domestic abuse? But the thing is, the way it's handled is so over the top that it's accidentally funny, isn't it? So it's kind
really
of like it weirdly fits. And the other guy on the review, like, he basically said that sometimes, though, a lot of films from the past, like Giallo films and stuff, like, they do deal with lots of really serious subject matters and still Absolutely. Do it, like, really theatrically and over the top. So, like,
campus balls, yeah.
And then this is sort of another thing that I was going to throw in there, because a lot of people said this feels Giallo inspired. And it does, because if you look at any Italian horror movies from the late 70s, like the 70s and 80s, it is this, to a degree, it's this level of balmy. And I think this is the weird way. Again, maybe the reason why the delivery's off, the lines are weird. Like, can you just stop being pregnant, please? That is just, what the hell? Feels like, and this is the thing, it feels like an Italian script being rewritten and translated into English and yeah. then dubbed over a movie.
Yes.
And yeah. it feels like that's the performance and the line delivery. It feels like it's been translated from a different language and now we're watching it in that language.
I think from the outset, one said that the likes of Argento was like a huge inspiration for this, and it was like his version of a giallo film. And I suppose the thing is there are going to be certain things that need to change in order to update it to a film that would literally have come out last year, because the films of the 70s, however like fun they are to watch now, I don't know, you wouldn't have been able to make this film, I don't think, back in the 70s. I do think it is like a film of the time, but it's made with a lens of like looking back, if that makes sense. What was your favourite kill out of the film?
Okay, let's go through it then. What's everyone's favourite kills? Right, my favourite death, just as the way how it kind of actually builds up to be something significant, is one of the male doctors has died off. Where basically, he's trying to go to sleep.
Yes.
And every time he goes around, it's like, it's something there, turns around, it's nothing there. It's like, for God's sake. And once you find out who the killer is, which we'll reveal later anyway, the killer is, you say, no, how is that even remotely possible?
But and then, it's definitely a thing.
and then him just lying down there, just having a nap, is all going to sleep.
Poor guy.
And then just, the amount of stabs was ridiculous.
It was the fact that it was like to the chest, and then it was like, yeah, just to finish you off, I'm also going to stab you in the face. And I was like, okay, I have respect for someone who's that thorough, so well done.
It's one of my favorite ones in terms of gore level. I think that one for me, I'm sitting there going, that is, oh, that's excessive.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Ed? Did you have one that you enjoyed?
Well, the big scene. Obviously,
shall we just go and talk about the big scene? Now?
There's so many I like, so I can talk about some before we get to that. Yeah. I love the doctor being bludgeoned by the trophy before it's actually like a pointy weapon. He just like repeatedly hits her with it like a Cluedo. Like it was.
Like this
murdered
bit of
in the
this
kitchen
trophy.
with the trophy. It's so Cluedo, isn't it?
It is. It really is. So theatrical. It's, it's great.
I can't tell you how long I've waited for this. But not yet. First, Dr. Weaver.
Hello? Hello?
Dr. Weaver?
Yes?
It's time to cut out the cancer.
What? Hello? I'm sorry, who is this? Hello?
I love how, again, it's very giallo of them, where eventually where using that trophy is turned into the murder weapon of the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I really love how all the shots are done. They're all very close up of seeing them just going and making it all nice and shiny, becoming the weapon of choice. Again, very giallo kind
that
of vibe.
Also reminded me of the opening to like Nightmare on Elm Street, where he's making the glove.
Yes,
absolutely. And the whole lighting and thingy of that space as well, like with the fans slowly going around and the chair.
It's good.
It's like crazy.
And it's good thinking, once you know what the subject matter is and you're sitting there going like, this is too pretty and too intense for what it has any right to be. Liam, how about you? How about you? What's your particular favourite death, if you have any particular?
I'd probably say, I'm sure there is, not obviously spoiling it, because I think it is a whole scene we need to talk about, but I am positive, I'm sure that she just rips someone in half, like literally just peels them open. There's like a head split or something. I can remember just thinking like, or also a hand through the body.
A punch through the torso.
I was like, it's Jason Goes to Manhattan all over again. She's just going to start punching heads off in a minute.
It's
mental. That just,
This whole movie's basically mental
there,
at this point.
There is actually one that's not. It's not like one of the big ones, but it's so funny. Is where that guy who's meant to be guarding in the hospital, and he goes, my pacemaker, and he like ends up exploding. That was hilarous.
It felt at that point. Poor it felt guy. A little bit. It felt a little bit like Jedi Force powers going like, so good. But yeah, one thing I want to throw out quickly at this point is like, obviously we've got the main sort of plot here, which is basically she's basically after having the traumatic bump in the head. Right. Mm-hmm. She now starts having weird visions and almost like a weird sleep paralysis of someone committing all of these goddamn horrible murders, right? And for a while, the whole idea is that you have no idea why they're connected. You don't know why somehow she's frozen and having a literal like paralysis while she's witnessing all of these deaths. And it's, again, it's done really well and a very quite really kind of well done with the visual effects of it and how she's sort of literally frozen in time and can't do a thing about it. It's really, really well done. But then once we start going deeper into the lore of this movie, this is where the onions start to peel off a bit and you're going, God damn it, this is starting to make me cry, starting to get a bit heavy. And it gets really, really bonkers. There is a whole very 90s police drama investigation thing with first you've got the two detectives who... What do we think about the two detectives?
Absolutely loved... both of them, their chemistry, and also I think the actress is Regina Moss. I've written down. She just stood out to me as just doing everything that I want a sassy cop to do. She just delivered all the lines, the looks that she gave to I think it's Winnie who's the forensic scientist. Yes. You know, when she's almost like the audience, you know, when she says like a really bad joke and the audience are like, just get off screen. She is that, but in the scene.
She's quite literally the audience because there's loads of moments where she sort of says like, nah, fuck off.
I'm sure there is a bit where she goes, what the fuck?
I know what that is.
Well, I've got two clips of her. Let's listen to these.
Go.
The killer said he was Gabriel. My Gabriel. Wait, are you saying that the killer is your imaginary friend?
The music.
So I've got that, but then a bit later, we've got this.
So I'm putting out a bolo on Sloth from the Goonies.
Yeah, right there. She cemented herself as a horror icon in my eyes right there.
And that's the thing with her. It's like there's a scene where they interrogate her. And then they have the phone call in the interrogation room. And her look the entire time is like, what the fuck is this? Because obviously you have the other detective, Kiko, I believe it is, who is the sexy Asian who flirts, which if that is not Avatar for James Wan, I don't know what is.
It's quite obvious, isn't it?
It's pretty obvious that James Wan's one put himself in the
field
movie.
A bit though, wasn't it? Because I'm sure he's kind of sending out mixed messages to the sister as well. I thought he was a bit of a dirty dog, to be honest.
He's a bit of a flirt. Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, basically James Wan Avatar is so on board with this nonsense. Like, he doesn't question any of it.
Believes it from the outset.
From the beginning. I'd say, like, we've got to have to investigate this.
I like the fact he's a bit shit, though. I like the fact that he's like Deputy Dewey in Scream a little bit. Yep. And there's a bit where he's chasing the killer. And
yes!
The killer's, like, literally doing parkour, like, parkour. Down the fire escape.
Parkour! Parkour!
And he like falls off the fire escape and lands on a trash can like a sack of shit, doesn't he? He's like so clumsy and like just gets up and he's like, oh fucking hell, running after him.
I love the build up to that because it's like, because obviously we're looking at how is this person doing this and going over, like, I'm gonna jump, and you're thinking like, you're gonna do well, you're gonna land it. No, fucking eat shit.
Yeah, I did enjoy that because it does get a bit tiresome, doesn't it, when suddenly these police officers become James Bond and just, I mean, even James Bond being the way he is sometimes, I'm like, come on, stop.
But it's good. But that's why the comparison works, is because you've got someone who just believes everything and the other one who just does
complete skeptic. Absolutely.
100% and just sits there being literally that point being the avatar for the audience, because it's like, what the hell are you doing?
I think
doing?
She's literally there to ground, obviously, how ridiculous the whole thing is, isn't it, really? Because, I mean, surely, like you said, Ed, when I think we can go into it with like a lens of, okay, well, we're just going to believe anything because it's silly and it's fun and we're going to have a good time. But you do get the kind of passive viewer who watches these sorts of things. And if things don't make like reality sense, then they just completely switch off. So I think those sorts of characters are 100% essential to keep them in.
And it definitely caters for that part of the audience at times, because there's a massive plot recap at one point. It's like, just in case you're not following the movie, I'll just tell you exactly what's happened. I've got a clip of that. I'll just play that. It's so hilarious. You know everything. A normal film like fan knows everything at this point, but it just reminds you, like, previously on Malignant kind of thing.
Yes. Play it.
Gabriel is inside of Madison's. He's been using her this whole time. He's been controlling her body like a puppet.
Whoa, Sydney, slow down. You're not making any sense.
I found Madison's history. She was born with a parasitic twin. Gabriel has been dormant all of these years. When Derek smashed Madison's head against the wall, it woke Gabriel up.
Sydney, that's insane.
Madison's birth mother is still alive, Kay. They lied.
I know. She's the woman who fell out of Madison's bathroom.
Are you kidding me? We have to talk to her. She's the only person left alive who knows anything.
So basically, that's my segue to, like, we can start talking about the crazy stuff, really.
There we go.
I've got to say, just before, sorry, there is nothing that annoys me more in films than when you have that perfect blob of exposition, or when the characters are going to find stuff. So, for example, her sister goes back to the asylum that's been abandoned for however many decades.
Yes.
She finds a perfectly organized rack of folders. In the folders, there are pictures of the doctors and all of the information that you possibly require to crack this mystery. If it was real, everyone would be dead and no one would know why. It just bugs me.
But this is the thing I've realized listening that again. I know what this is, right? It's partly not just the exposition dump, but do you know whenever I watch movies with my mum, she's the one that asks for a shit ton of questions. If I watch this movie with her and say, what the hell is this? So just wait a minute. She will explain everything to you.
This is for the mums out there.
This is for all the mums out there who can't follow movies.
Absolutely. James Wan, you cater to everyone. Well done.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But what was the moment for you in this movie that got to the point where you're going, actually, I kind of feel like this movie's gone apeshit at this point. What's the pinnacle point for you in the movie where you go like, okay, this movie's gone nuts?
For me, the prison scene with all the stereotype women, like, criminals from different eras.
Looking like a Lady Gaga telephone video.
It does!
Sorry, I cannot hear you, I'm kind of busy.
Yeah. Crazy.
For and they're delivering, like, sort of over-the-top insults. Let's listen to an insult.
Go on.
What's the matter, Pollyanna? You get lost on the way to the country club?
It's ridiculous. Isn't Zoe Bell's in that as well, isn't she?
Yeah, she's,
yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Look, I don't want any trouble. Fuck! What did you do to get in here? Forget to separate the recycling?
Jesus Christ.
Nice for a price. What you got?
Yeah, like, I love that. Like, what do you do to get in here? Fail to separate the recycling?
What I love about it is, like, it's literally every stereotype in prison movies ever. You've got 100%. One person who literally is like Pam Grier with the afro and the look.
And the flares.
You've got someone who looks like it's from a 1980s gang movie. Yeah. You've got someone who looks like a greaser. You've got everyone's in from different decades. But like, these are the rough ladies.
Yeah. And also the fact that the cops think it's a good idea to then put her in there with all of these people. When... at this point, we don't know what she's capable of, but also the fact that she, if she wasn't capable of that, she would very much be dead.
Yeah.
So, well done, cops. Police in America.
They're all well idiots.
Done. Well done.
For me, what's, though...
What's great on. As well about that scene, visually, you think, this is a very large prison cell. I think something might happen in this scene.
It does give you a little bit like, this is big. Although, speaking of big... just to throw things out there, all can I just say, all the locations are bizarre. Like, they're all TARDISes. Because if you look at the outside of the house, the original, the regular house, it's tiny as hell. But you go in there, that is a fucking huge house.
Yeah.
Living room's huge, bedroom's huge, which I actually think, again, this is another meta thing I want to throw in there. How meta is James Wan in this? Is he actually poking fun of his own movies?
I very much thought that, yeah, 100%. What stuck out to me as an example of that is when, I mean, I personally, I love the whole, like, you know, the underground city kind of setting.
Which actually is a real place you can go to.
Yeah, which I 100% want to check out now. Mm. But, you know, the scene particularly where it's, like, just a room full of mist with, like, the carriages. I was like, this 100% looks like The Further in Insidious. So it has no right, like, looking like this, but James Wan...
Yeah, and
I thought there was going to be a red door somewhere. I mean, that was literally going to be like the icing on the cake.
And a lot of the sets are like that. I feel like James Wan's houses are very nice houses. They're never like ruggedy. Yeah. They're all like, everyone seems to be very well off. They all have very nice big houses. But I love the fact that if that's the case, it's like, well, let's make a joke about it. Let's make the outside look really tiny, that it would no way fit this big house in.
But yeah, I mean, logically, how did they afford that house? Because... he looked, the shitty husband looked like he was unemployed because he was at home watching sports. And didn't she work at a care home and is going to be going on maternity leave soon? So
there's no way.
She's a nurse, isn't she? Yeah, in a care home. Yeah, basically.
So yeah, something's not adding up. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe she's got some side hustle. OnlyFans. She's got OnlyFans.
Oh, dear. the thing is now that that's an extra kink if we really show what happens next. For me, though, can I just say the moment for me where the movie just goes, okay, this is going to be fucking bonkers. It's the moment where we find out, it's already mentioned, where we find out the biological mother is still alive and falls through the goddamn fucking roof. I sat there the moment that happened out of nowhere, because one, that attic must be the rickety floors or whatever, but she fucking falls such a high height and onto the table and sofa. And I'm thinking... wow.
It's the one room as well which doesn't have like another story below it. Like the living room for some reason has two stories, just so we can see her fall for at least 10 seconds.
It was an impact.
Everywhere else, she would have probably just landed on a bed somewhere and been fine. But no, she has to shatter every bone in her body.
And the thing is, it's after a very serious bit where they try and do like hypnosis and they try and say, we can figure out what the trauma is through hypnosis. They feel like, we have a breakthrough or something of that sort. And then this happens. And
I mean, that's got to have
been
deliberate as well. Because, again, like that whole scene was almost a parody of his other scenes. And then for it to go into that. And I mean, Annabelle Wallace, we spoke about, To be honest, I think, yeah, on first viewing, I just thought, oh my God, you're actually really not a good actress. But then I did realise, and it was particularly at that scene, you know, when she does fall through and then the camera kind of goes to slow-mo and then they redub the weird scream over her. Which is like,
yes!
Ah! You're just like, oh my God. It's, yeah, pure cheese. Loved it.
Let's just talk about it now. Fuck it. Let's talk about it. So, let's talk about the moment where the movie goes apeshit, even more so than ever, which is the prison scene. So, after that happens, we find out from the exposition dump that basically she has a twin brother. And this twin is fucking horrendous because it's technically not a real... It's technically a twin, but actually is a tumor that happens to have grown arms and teeth and can talk and everything. It's the... Can I just say the prosthetics for that is fucking epic, by the way.
Yeah, it, really good.
It's disgusting. When you first realise what it is, it's genuinely, unnervingly disgusting.
Literally me in the morning before I have a shower.
This is you before coffee. That's you before your cup of coffee.
My arms just slowly come up out of bed, yeah.
Why do I get the feeling that's secretly the best Snickers advert? You're not you without your Snickers.
Just malignant. Just drinking electricity.
You're just a parasite.
So, yeah.
But after they cut out the cancer, which we realise is basically an entire twin.
That should have been a tagline, I'm just going to say as well. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Like, cut out the cancer.
Yeah.
But yeah, only a small bit remained of Gabriel into her head until bad boyfriend, bad husband goes kapak, breaks it open, and now is controlling her. So the killings is actually her... And this is the thing that made me even more confused and realizing, why is this person walking like this? So Gabriel is literally at the back of her head. So in order to control her, they're walking backwards, basically. Mm-hmm. Arms are broken pretty much so she can move, do stuff backwards. And everything is done backwards. And the reveal to figure out this is legitimately the case is a horrendous scene where she goes to the back of her head and just rips the crack of her skull open. It is genuinely disgusting.
And also somehow doesn't bleed out as well. Let's just add that. So, I mean, the thing is, I think what we need to acknowledge is the fact that probably Gabriel is the real victim in this film because he's sedated. He has what limbs he does have cut off. And then he could be claustrophobic. He's then pushed inside her skull and then sewn shut. So I'm not meaning to be funny. As soon as you do see the light of day, you're going to go out there and probably exact a bit of revenge. So yeah. I think he's perfectly justified, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
Gabriel.
I'll tell you another movie this reminded me of, Basket Case. As well.
100%. Yes. Yeah.
The moment that happened, I said Basket Case, 100%. Mm. Which might be a movie we have to do with the podcast at some point. Anyway, we have to do Basket Case. But yeah. And then by this point, it gets to... It's no longer a horror movie at this point. This movie is like the most over-the-top, some of the best action I've seen in a while. Some of the stunt work and murder work is genuinely good soup.
Chef's kiss.
It's good soup.
Good soup.
What's that happened? I don't... Honestly, can I just say, I don't know how that was done. I don't know. Did any of you guys actually do any research a little bit of how you think that was done? Did she just literally walk backwards or was it done? How was this done?
I think it's a contortionist, like a stunt. Like, I think there's two performers, a male and female, and they were contortionists, so they could bend their body in that weird way to look like it was going backwards.
Yeah, because if you look at certain parts as well, you can see that it looks like there's a prosthetic of Annabelle Wallace's face kind of on there. And I mean, it looks great. Like, it's not like super noticeable because, I mean, we're talking about it now, so we're kind of like, oh. But I mean, they obviously had a decent budget on there, so I think they probably CGI'd a lot, like, you know, to blend the face. And like you said, Ed, just have someone pretending to do it backwards. But also in the pursuit with the cop, I did think some of it obviously was very apparently CG. It just looked very, very good.
It might be a combination of all three. It could be some of it could literally be Abigail Wallace just doing a few movements and back or whatever. Some of it could be a contortionist. Some could be CG. And I didn't notice which parts were very... I knew some bits were like, this is ridiculously weird and hokey, but I didn't notice it by that point, because by that point, the movie literally, to me, jumped the shark. And it's like, you can do anything now. Fucking aliens could arrive at this point, and this would no longer surprise me.
Yeah.
The action in that scene is probably one of... I'm legitimately saying it's some of the best action I think I've seen in so long.
Well... The thing is, it kicks off with the prison fight scene, and then you think that, well, that's pretty good, but then it keeps going, and you get the fight scene in the actual offices section of the police station, so you're thinking, this is pretty good, then this is amazing. It's like builds and builds in the last 20 minutes of the movie. It's fantastic.
I think from the prison cell scene onwards, I was just having an absolute ball even the 100%. First time I saw the film. The only thing I would say is, I think the only thing I can kind of compare it to is like, you know, Mad Max Fury Road. For me, that film never ever stopped, and it kept going. But the only thing with this is, I feel like the hospital was almost a bit of a come down from the police precinct, because we'd had like this absolute massacre, and then everything suddenly contained to like a hospital room. And I was like, I know it needed that intimacy for that kind of finale, but I don't know.
In that last sort of section, you do get the mind prison section with Madison and Gabriel. I've got a clip from that, right? And the reason why, please, I love this clip, I'll tell you why, because it reminded the dialogue, the scripting reminded me of like two like famous songs. It's like, it reminded me of that. So like, and I've pasted them in so you can hear like what I'm talking about. And it's just hilarious.
It's over, Gabriel. I'm taking it all back. My mind, my body, my everything. Now you get to live in a world that I create.
That's the first one.
You can't lock me in here forever. You'll always be stuck with me. Sooner or later, I will get out.
I know. But next time, I'll be ready for you.
Ed, you've outdone yourself. Motherfucker, you've outdone yourself this time. Thank you. Oh my god. You've outdone yourself, Ed. Congratulations. Oh, I love it. Oh my god. I've never seen such a wonderfully milked joke in all my life. Thank you.
I just had to let that clip play a little longer than expected, because it's just, I love that song so much.
I'm aware. Oh, Christ on a bike. You've outdone yourself, Ed. That one's, you've outdone yourself.
But you know what I mean though, don't you? In terms of the way it's like the most sort of obvious kind of writing. Like, I'll be ready. And like, my body, my mind, and my everything. It's like, it's easy writing. That's like lyrics, like memorable lyrics. And that's what, when I was watching, I was thinking, reminds me of something. I didn't know what it was. And then afterwards, at the second viewing, I thought, that's those two songs.
For some reason, I love the fact you're watching going, watching this very serious Mind Palace scene, Barry White and Baywatch come into play.
I'm never going to be able to watch this film the same way again.
If you want to throw another musical bit, that whole Mind, the whole Mind Palace thing reminds me a little bit of that scene in Chicago. So it doesn't add even more. So all we now is Catherine Zeta-Jones doing a tap dance. And, I feel as if, and this is just me personally, I know it's supposed to be a bit of a surprise, but I kind of wished that the whole movie was that. I really, in my mind, I kind of wish the whole movie was this balmy, because it means that there was a bit of a middle ground where, again, I was skeptical sitting there going, this isn't, something's up. I'm not sure whether this is, again, James Wan on purposely doing this or falling into the trap of going like, well, actually, okay, they're going to love the last half an hour, but kind of feeling like not sure if you could push it on, because the opening is the right level of cheese, right? The opening of the movie is the right level of cheese bonkers dumbness. Then it doesn't do that for often, and it's taking itself maybe a little too seriously.
Hella slow, I think, in the middle. Like, I know obviously that they're trying to misdirect you,
yes,
and set up like, oh well, how is she seeing this? What is going on? But yeah, unfortunately, I do think it does suffer in like the middle act in particular, and I think the third act does make up for it in quite a few ways. But that definitely, it goes back to my point earlier. I think that opening set a tone. It kind of then deviated from that tone, but then you weren't sure if it was trying to be serious or if it was hammy. And then at the end, they were like, no, this is definitely hokey. So it was, it was a mix.
I personally liked the fact that it surprised me, though. I think if it was all the same tone all the way through, I'd know what it is immediately. And I liked that it deviated me and it was like, and I didn't understand what it was. I because that was fresh to me. That was, I hadn't seen that before. I hadn't seen that for a while anyway. So yeah. I liked the mix, to be honest.
Did it completely surprise you then when there was the reveal that Gabriel was a growth?
No.
In the skull.
No, it didn't completely surprise me, no.
I don't know. I think it was a shame because they were, like, obviously pinning a lot on the reveal. And I think there was no other explanation other than that it had to kind of be, it was obviously going to be her. I never once doubted it was her.
No.
As soon as I saw that, because she's usually got blonde hair as well. So kind of knowing her as an actress elsewhere and then seeing her in this, I would probably say what looks like a really awful wig. I kind of then knew because the killer had like the same hair and I was like, okay, well, there's something going on. I don't know. I think it definitely knowing what you're in for helps. I think so. Once you've got that initial viewing out of the way, after that, I think you're onto a jam.
So maybe this is like, it is like a thing where, do you know when someone says like, you need to try this new foreign food from a weird place you never had before. And you describe it and go like, this is a beer. Meh. And you have to try it, whether you're up for it. And that means you will have more of that again if you like it. And if you don't like it, you know, whatever. It is nice to have the nice surprise.
Do you think that if it was the same tone, we would get something like Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, where that kind of like vibe, where it's like, it's slick, because that movie looks great. It looks slick. But it's like really over the top and hammy kind of thing.
Yeah, that is a perfect example to bring in. I'd say that probably nails what this was trying to do so much better. Because I think it genuinely is creepy as well as being absolute. I mean, that nosebleed scene, for goodness sake.
That was brilliant.
It's absolutely insane.
Actually, that's a really good point. I didn't even think about it until you mentioned it. Drag Me to Hell is pretty much this thing. The tone is hammy and silly, but the energy is the same throughout. But it's just the right level of ham and cheese. It's the perfect ham and cheese sandwich there, right? It's not too much, not too little, and it continues through it. Well, with this movie, what it decides to do, it gives you a skip ton of cheese at the beginning, and then it says like, actually, wait a bit. We need to find the right slice of ham and the right amount of rye. Wait a minute. And then instead of giving you the right amount of ham, it gives you the entire fucking pig.
This reminded me, and I think this is... This film, I think, very easily, obviously, could have been a whole lot worse in different hands. So, I mean, 100%. It is credit to James Wan. But this is the sort of film that I think wouldn't be out of place, you know, like on the Sci-Fi Channel or like The Asylum making them. You know how you've got like Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus?
Yes.
Like, that's what pulls you in, is the fact that you're going to see a fuck off great white shark eat a airplane out of the sky, but you've suddenly then got this weird like subplot that's going on. And to me, that's kind of, you know, in all those films you've always got a submarine and then there's like a drug thing going on or Russians or something, as well as this massive creature. Like, this was, we've got this weird giallo killer cheesy hokey thing going on, but also domestic abuse, we've also got her going through emotional trauma, we've also got a blossoming romance and a sister doing princess parties. It was just odd.
but again, the argument for people who are into that, maybe even James himself, like, well, this was done on purpose. But then I almost argue that not in. If it was properly fully done on purpose with all these extra bits, I think it would have been. It could have leaned into it more, perhaps. Mm. But the fact that it's a surprise did, like I said, all the cheese at the beginning, all the ham at the beginning, spending too much time trying to find the right slices of bread to get for the sandwich.
I mean, that makes it fresh then. I mean, the thing is, it's like we've already had those movies that are doing it knowingly.
Yeah.
And this movie is doing it so it's not knowingly, but it's like it is, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of like it's a weird mix, and that makes it kind of interesting.
This movie makes it more of a
talking point. If it was done exactly like Drag Me to Hell, I don't think people would be talking about it as much.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And I think the repeatability and the repeat viewing of it, that's leaning into the fact that it's obviously been made to be kind of like a cult film.
100%.
Although it is something that, I don't know, there's going to be screenings of in 10 years' time, and people are probably going to dress up with weird backwards costumes and stuff.
Surprised I hasn't picked up. I think the problem with this is because of its advertising, because of its weird kind of production, because of all that, and the fact that it looks way too slick for what the subject is, it didn't do very well in the box office, because it's really hard to sell this movie, and a lot of semi sort of kind of panned reviews. Now, here's the thing though, just to go for the critical response of it at the end of the movie, it has an approval rating of about, on Rotten Tomatoes, of 76%. So it is quite high up there. But a lot of the reviews are very unsure of it. They're very middling. They're a little, they're still not 100% sure if this is a self-parody, if it's a parody, if it's unaware of itself. It might be a bit too tonally confusing for an audience to go in their first time and see whether they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
This does feel like a cult movie, where this will be one that people will be watching over and over again, trying to, and over time going, actually, this is secretly genius.
I mean, the reviews as well, obviously, particularly from the critics, I imagine they would have been like literally hot off the press. They've seen it once and then they have to give their opinion. And if I'm being 100% honest, the first time I saw this film, I really didn't like it.
Me too.
Left with a bad taste in my mouth, and I was like, "This is awful." Like, and I did think, honestly, this is a misstep for James Wan.
Yeah.
But I think then I watched it probably again like a week or so later, and really, really dug it. And I mean, even talking about it now, I do enjoy how silly it is. I don't think it's his best film by miles, but it's completely different to anything else that's out there at the moment and has been out for a while.
Unfortunately, it's not a movie where you can't reveal the ending and just reveal what it is, because it ruins it for you if you realize without first time watching it, the surprise factor of going, you need to know what the goddamn thing was with this goddamn growth situation. You need to know.
He also said, James Wan also said that he did it, it's like a love letter to his early filmmaking like ideas and stuff like that. So when you're starting off as a filmmaker, you have these stupid crazy ideas that you can't actually make because no one will give you the money to make it. So now he has the freedom to make those silly ideas. So he's honouring the dreams back then of when he was starting out and wanted to make silly, crazy movies.
Absolutely. I mean, it's under his own banner now, isn't it, as well, with Atomic Monster. I mean, he's got kind of free reign with stuff, hasn't he? And I think that's an important point. A studio obviously getting behind him doing something like this. We don't get that many original like properties in horror as well. I mean, Scream's obviously just made a return just this week. They are mining from the old stuff because they know it's gonna do well. So it is a shame it didn't do better. But
Wan made the studio it's $1 billion like for Aquaman, so
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think he can do what he wants for a little bit, can't he still?
So that's basically Malignant. So we talked through all the best bits, and even spoiling it, even though partly spoiling the ending in this being basically, just to go and clarify, this is a movie that realistically we can talk about, but you need to watch it to understand what the hell we're talking about, because it is one of these weird experiences that us explaining it to you sounds like we're on drugs. It sounds like we mentioned before we started. This is like it's a party movie where you're sitting there. You've already had a few to drink, or you've done some extra substances. You're sitting there going like, I don't know what's happening here. And then halfway through, you've had more drink, or you had more substances. And by the end of it, you're going, this is amazing. And yep. it's a full roller coaster of what the fuckery. Yep. But the only way to do that is you need to see it. So I recommend just have a watch just so you're aware that this weirdness exists, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Right. No, people definitely need to check it out. I think it's it's a film to be seen, to be believed.
And on that note, shall we try and put Malignant into the trashometer, please, Ed?
Let's do it.
Trashometer.
Thank you. Right, so if this is the first time you're on with us, welcome, and thank you for joining us with this weird one. Thank you for that. So the way we do reviews are a little different around here. We don't do star ratings or A pluses. We do something you call the trashometer, where we basically have a balancing scale of how much level of enjoyment trash to just genuine trash we have got to it. So it's trying to find the balance of just the right amount that we have enjoyed. So let's go through the scale. First of all, right at the very, very bottom is tame. Tame basically means that it's not a low level of fun trash. In fact, the movie was quite boring or was missing or missing something of ilk, which I can... like, what is just basically just bland, which this movie is not. So automatically, we know that's out the window. Tiny bit trashy. Tiny bit trashy basically means that at this point, that there are some levels of trash and there's some genuine, like, good bits we enjoyed, but it could have leaned into it more and be even more trashier. Then there is trash right in the middle. Perfect trash. It's the right mixture of stuff. It is the cult movie. It is the golden goose. It is the mwah. It's the good soup. It is the perfect balance, right? Then you have too trashy. Too trashy means it has all these fun elements, but there's a couple of bits that we're starting to get annoyed at or a little angry at or frustrated or even slightly offended by. We're enjoying it, but it's a bit tough. And then finally, it's torture. Torture means we pretty much hated it. It is too much for us. There is way... It's no longer a fun ride. We're just hating the entire experience. And so, I think we should ask Liam first for being our guest. Where would you put Malignant on the trashometer?
I don't think it's by any means a perfect, like, trashy film. Mm-hmm. I think it was maybe a little bit too trashy for me, maybe. Mm. Just because, and I think, Ed, I think you've done this for me now, because you brought Drag Me to Hell into the conversation. And I mean, that I absolutely adore that film. And like, when I think about it, that would be like the perfect balance for me. So I completely get it. It's subjective. I had a good time with it, but I think there are still some elements of it that did annoy me. I think it's a fine line to tread with bad performances and bad writing. And I think it could have been done either a little clearer or a little bit better, in all honesty.
And that makes perfect sense. I can totally see that, because I was in that kind of field too, looking, going like, I'm not sure if this is entirely purposeful or James is secretly a genius. And I think that is the mind loops, the gymnastics you have to go through to really embrace that is hard. Yeah, and I can totally get that. Ed, how about you?
Well, I can judge this on two things. If I was judging it on my first viewing and coming out thinking, "Oh, what? This is horrible. This is shit. This is too much." So the first viewing, it would definitely rank too trashy on the trashometer. Yeah. But since then, and watching it on DVD, watching it a few times, letting it sort of soak in like a fine wine. It's like, I've not stopped talking about it. And it was when I did my list of like top five movies, I put Malignant in my top five movies of last year, because I've just not stopped talking about it. I just found it so much fun, and it surprised me, and not many movies surprise me nowadays. So I personally would rank it in trash, perfect trash.
Okay, so this is not... Oh, my God, the side is on me
now. You're deciding this, Johan.
All right, so, okay, so Personally, here's the thing. Like, it does have its problems, and I get that. And so it's ones that Liam's basically recommended. It's that weird middle part where I'm not entirely sure what you're doing with it. But the opening, full of cheese, and the moment the mum falls through the roof, onwards.
Plot point lands in the movie.
That is the legitimate point. The big bang moment for me goes like, okay, let's see where we're going. You grab my interest again. And by that point, I was obsessed. The last half an hour is probably the most bonkers I've seen a movie go, like, in a long time. And yeah, for me, that it's not the surprise reveal or whatever. It's more the fact that I'm sitting there going, like, it's a lot of what the fuck moments that, yeah, I had a really good time with it. But I will say that there were moments, like, watching it the first time, this is now a movie I'm going to have to watch again. Sitting there going, like, that middle part really does drag, and it really does annoy me. So here's what I will do. We do a bit of a mini compromise here. This will be trash, I think. However, it is on the very high end of trash. Mm. Like, it could have, honestly, it could have gone wrong. Like, yeah, really wrong.
Teetering, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It could have gone wrong. Like, thing is, they had plenty of opportunities in this movie to go completely wrong.
Yeah.
But it somehow doesn't. It just balances itself enough. But it's like teetering on it. It's like, for example, like, you're literally on the edge of a cliff, and it's like one blow would have made this whole movie collapse.
Yeah.
But it didn't. And for some reason, that last 30 minutes for me is stuck in my mind palace for life.
And I think it's funny, yeah, that we all had the same experience though as well. Like, we, yeah, all watched it the first time and went, this is horrible. And then it's upon like second and third viewing that you've kind of then come to love it. So I think, I imagine that's probably the same for a lot of people. I mean, my mum's watched it, my other half's watched it, and they both absolutely hated it. So, but they've not seen it again. So who, yeah, knows? It could be on their top five as well if they watched it again.
I mean, after the first viewing, I even thought, has he, like, wheeled out some work experience boy to, like, direct it? And he's just, like, taking him under his wing kind of thing.
It's like, come on, boy.
While I work on the other movie I'm working on.
It was like, you could almost tell that there were, like, scenes that he definitely directed, but then maybe second unit did the rest. You know what I mean? Like, it was someone else. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Odd experience, the whole thing.
So that's why, and that's the thing is, it's because it's such an odd experience, I can't, personally, I'll put it in trash, I'm putting it with a caveat and saying, like, look, this is because the ending, the last 30 minutes or so, is the most bonkers thing on the planet, and you have to watch it. And it's so bonkers that it redeemed the rest of the movie for me.
Yeah.
And it's just about balance, because if the movie kept on how the tone was going in the middle, this would have been terrible. And it was starting to teeter too much into one side. But then, like I said, the other 30 minutes, a big fucking pig of ham just went in there, and it balanced it out at the end.
This is another thing as well. I'm sorry, because I probably should have mentioned this earlier, but
sure,
this film to me as well, what it reminded me of a lot was M. Night Shyamalan's Split. Like, as,
yes,
in, it's sold on like one thing, but then obviously the end is very weird. And I mean, almost, I think these two could exist in the same universe as well, because if I'm not mistaken, Madison is kind of almost a superhuman by the end of this film, because she finds that she's got weird Gabriel strength that she can just use when she wants to.
I love
that.
So,
I don't know. Maybe it's the mashup of the century that we didn't know we needed, but I personally enjoyed Split up until I think the point where James McAvoy then turned into the Beast and it became like this weird paranormally supernaturally thing. But
while on the other side, it only gets to the bit when she does become the paranormal,
exactly,
crazy beast.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, I think if you had the start of Split and then the end of Malignant, you've got the perfect film.
And so, yeah, I think we should put this at a very high trash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Perfect trash.
That was really loud in my headphones, that clip.
Perfect trash.
And it is. I feel, and actually, I now realize now this is, now I want to watch Split and Malignant as a double bill and see how I feel.
Oh, 100%. It could go together.
Yeah.
I watched Malignant and I watched Psycho Goreman, like, quite close together.
Jesus. Psycho Goreman is a double feature that I can get on board with. I love Psycho Goreman.
Psycho
so
Goreman's amazing.
Do I like hunky boys?
Or do I?
Or do I?
I do not care for hunky boys. Or do I?
Not my hunky boys! Like later on.
I think, yeah.
It was, it was the thread that I just hope that they pull on again later, and they did, and I was like, yes. Oh, I see you, filmmakers.
It's such a surprisingly funny movie, that one. So yeah. I think basically this, I think if you want to go back to doing that, Malignant works well as a double feature now. We need to find another movie that works with it. So yeah, any kind of weird bad taste you get from that movie, you can counteract it with another movie, vice versa, to give that balance out. And you get this nice smooth transition between one and the other. Right then, so we've got to start wrapping things up a little bit, but usually this is a time where we do our plugins, where basically we talk about what we've been doing, what we're planning on, what's going on at the minute, where you can find us, all the social stuff, etc., etc. So, Liam, what's been going on with you?
Quite a lot went on towards the end of last year. So we released a short film back at Halloween called Take a Look with Super Freak Media. So if you like trash, you'll probably like Take a Look, because it has a weird, surprisingly similar looking to Gabriel. I might have been somehow, I don't know, subconsciously, yeah.
You have a psychic bond.
So yeah, definitely check that out on YouTube. Also, we need to get you boys on our podcast.
100%.
We've got No Ghouls Allowed, which is like the general kind of horror chat, but I think we're going to have like a year roundup episode, which is going to go out at the end of January, so this month. And then me and the other Liam run They're Queer, which is obviously focusing more on a queer perspective in horror. So I guess the main thing to do is just check out Super Freak Media on social media, all the medias, and if you find stuff you like, and give us a follow and a like, that'd be lovely. Thank you.
I have to say something. The That's Queer podcast at the minute, I've been loving it to bits, because it's very different to your other podcast. Yeah. The soundboard on that though, Ed, you'd be jealous of it. It's so insane how many clips.
We do it in post. We fix it in post. We wanted a soundboard, but then honestly, I don't think I have the technical know-how, capabilities, or energy.
It is an absolute ball, like wiring it all up.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
I've
got a mixer and there's so many cables around me now. It's like,
the thing is me and the other Liam will usually end up like doing a really like piss poor impression of a soundbite or something. So we'll do like a terrible impression of something. So usually I just edit that out, put the actual one in, and then we've just got each other laughing at each other being absolute dopes. So
there is an energy on that podcast that just makes me constantly giggle, because it's just like every 5 minutes or so there is another pop culture reference thrown in there.
I love it.
There's a weird energy.
It's when I'm editing it, I just keep finding like things, and it like takes me back to like memes like a decade ago, or like vines and stuff. So
it does have that energy, which I loved a bit, which chaos. Is why I need to be on that show at some point.
We need to get you on. I need to think about like what would be the right kind of episode. I mean, we're planning what we're going to be doing for this year. Our next episode is going to be Scream, because we went to go see Scream 5 together last night, and then also obviously the original. Have you seen Scream 5 yet?
I'm seeing it on Monday, and we're going to be recording next time Johan comes over. We're going to be doing a cult versus current of Scream. Yes.
Like, I love
Scream in general. Scream
really
in general,
good.
Like all the Screams, like even the TV series, little bits of that. And then comparing it to the latest movie.
I'd be interested to see what you guys think. Obviously, I'm not going to give anything away, but yeah, it's interesting.
I'm intrigued. I'm definitely really intrigued. So yeah, thank you very much for that, Liam.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. 100%.
Ed, is there anything that we have planned, other than, you already mentioned we were planning on doing maybe a cult versus current with Scream, so what else we got?
The video I'm editing at the moment is, for Christmas, I got, like, Sophie got me an 90s Ninja Turtle figure, Leonardo, like, because I'm collecting the Turtles NECA figures. And she accidentally got, like, a bootleg one first and tried to
swap it. I saw this on your Instagram. Yeah.
And so, but they gave us sort of a little bit of a refund, but said you can keep
partial
it.
Partial refund.
And now I've got the real one, and I've got, because you bought me the real one as well. I've got the bootleg and the real one, so I'm going to compare them in the video.
I was going to say, I want to see how similar they are. I think I've got a bootleg Pennywise somewhere.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he came and his feet were not attached, so wow. Super glue was a friend that day.
But here's the thing, I was talking, because Sophie told me about it before you got it, and the thing she said was basically, she sat there going like, you know that, you know, if you, I looked, she looked on eBay, sometimes the bootlegs go even more than the original thing. Oh, it's because it's so rare to find this particular bootleg version.
There's so many bootleg Michael Myers figures out there. It is unreal. And Freddy Krueger as well. There's a Mexican version of Freddy Krueger.
Love it.
He just looks fantastic.
Senor Krueger?
Senor Krueger.
I mean, this one was interesting because at first glance, it looks genuine. And then start looking at it and you're thinking, something is a bit off here. It looks a bit off. It's a bit weird. And then you keep analysing it and you're noticing all these things. So it's going to hopefully make a good video.
I can't wait to check that out. That'll be ace.
That'll be wonderful. Yeah. And on my end, we've been doing more stuff with the podcast. I'm trying to introduce a new podcast, which is Not So Trash Reviews, where we look at B-movies that are good or movies that were misunderstood. And I've already recorded an episode, which we're editing at the minute, where we talk about Patrick, which is the 1970s exploitation movie involving a killer coma patient, and how genuinely good that is, despite how exploitative it feels. And I did that with Cinelit, Adam Marshall would be quite nice to kind of go through that. So yeah, it's genuinely going to be a very interesting approach. I'm going to be approaching it more like a video essay rather than an actual just conversation between people talking about rubbish.
Sounds cool.
It'll be interesting. That episode should be, I'm editing it hopefully this weekend, so hopefully it'll be out in the next week or two to have a little peek before this one comes out from there.
Awesome.
So,
excellent.
Right, let's wrap it up from there. So Liam, thank you again very much for popping on. You've been a blast as usual.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. I always love talking about weird shit with you guys. So, anytime.
Next time, you pick the movie.
Yeah, as long as it just doesn't involve tumours and teeth, I think I'll be okay. Do you know what I mean? I feel like you're either trying to tell me something or...
It's like, look, Liam, I have a secret fetish. I have to tell you.
It's like, which parasitic film are we talking about today?
Oh, my God. Imagine the next one's another Parasite movie. Then, like, oh, shit.
Let's do it. Make it a trilogy.
and on that bombshell, I'll say to everyone, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time.
See you guys.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.